Shalom and welcome to the Jewish Lives podcast, where we discuss all things Jewish, culture, art, food, faith, history, and much more.
I'm Cherie Trotter for Jewish Lives. Today I'm interviewing Noam and Elisheva Fogel. They are the Shlachim for the Auckland Hebrew Congregation. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
Good to be here.
Yeah.
just tell us a little bit about your family background so we can get to know you a little bit. Noam, how about you start?
Sure. So Elisheva and I grew up in the same community, small community in Israel. My mother made Aliyah when she was around 17 years old from Toronto, Canada. And my father is an Israeli, and his parents are immigrants from Romania. War, they passed away. Holocaust survivors. And I think Elisheva's family.
I grew up in a American family. So my parents moved to Israel in their 70s. Not in their 70s, but in the 1970s after they got married. And they raised all six of us in Israel. We were all born and raised there. Grew up in a very Zionistic home that believes that our place is definitely in Israel, and was always very connected to the Jews in the diaspora. It was always kind of engraved at home in everyone that the Jewish people overseas are as important as the Jews in Israel, and we need to find a way to connect the two worlds. So I think that's what kind of led us here. Noam grew up in a similar home and brought us to meeting the Jews overseas.
Yeah, we grew up in an environment that welcomed new immigrants, welcomed new lone soldiers. Our houses, both of them, were always open to new people, and that's how we were grew up. And I think that's what made us, Noam and Elisheva, as shlichim. I think that's why we chose what we're doing today. We wanted to keep the what we grew up on and welcome others to our house.
I just want to pick up on a couple of points there from what you've said. Noam, you mentioned one of your grandparents being a Holocaust survivor. How did that impact your life and the life of your family?
My grandfather was a Holocaust survivor. He spent his last months as a Jewish person in Poland, in Auschwitz. And when the war came to an end, he immigrated to Israel, and he settled down in Rehovot, which is a not so big city in the center of Israel. He never spoke about, I actually didn't know him. He passed away before I was born. And he, according to my father, he didn't speak about it. I guess it was too traumatic to open it again. Although I do have, she's not my biological grandmother, but she was a good friend of him and also a far family. Her name is also Fogel, or surname. And she told me a lot about the history of my grandfather and what he was, what he's been through in Poland and in Romania. So the Holocaust wasn't a subject that we spoke about during, but it is something that's personally very interesting me. We went to Romania. I went by myself a few times, and once I took Elisheva with me to look for our history, and we actually found the grave of my great grandfather in Romania, in some bizarre and remote village in the middle of nowhere with no roads, no nothing. So it wasn't, according to my father, it wasn't something that he spoke about, and I guess that's why we didn't talk about it too much. But again, in the recent years, I'm more and more interested in and I'm exploring it.
Can I just add on from a side perspective, because we did get to grow up together. I think that something about him not speaking about it has made Noam more eager to find out more about it. And therefore, there's been a lot of research throughout the years of family history and connections and getting as many stories possible about his grandfather. So we can know a little bit of what he went through and who he's lost there. And so it's interesting that actually the not talking about it has triggered the will to go and find out as much possible.
Yeah, you're right.
Elisheva, you mentioned growing up in a Zionist home. What does that mean for you?
I think Noam touched it a little bit. Our home was always open to anyone, especially the Jewish people that came from overseas and were still trying to figure out Israel, whether it was lone soldiers that, you know, come to the army but have no family in Israel. So it kind of, as a little girl, you know, those little eyes were always seeing people from all over the world come in and feel welcomed at home just because they're Jewish. They, you know, my family had no idea, no previous, you know, friendship with them or even knowledge of who they are, but just heard that there's some Jewish people around that need somewhere to be, somewhere to stay, somewhere to do the Pesach Seder, or somewhere to just do a Shabbat meal, or just a night to put their head down on a normal bed. Then my home was always open to that. But more so than that, I mean, we all grew up on one hand very Israeli because we're living in Israel, and that's, you know, there's Hebrew outside, we're going to Israeli schools. But when you came home, you know, in your four walls at home, it was a pretty American home. My parents were just learning the language, you know, of Hebrew. Their culture was American, whether it's food, whether it's just, you know, different kind of, I would say, manners, different culture. And we all, each one of us, of my siblings, were six siblings. We all enlisted into the IDF, into the army. I think mainly because we did feel like it was a huge privilege to live in Israel and that we need to do whatever we can to protect the land and the people. And that is something that our parents kind of engraved in us by saying, hey, we've left an amazing life in New York and given up great professions and being close to family and friends in order to do something we believe is bigger than living a comfortable life. And so I guess we felt as growing up, you know, that we need to give back in a way. And if it's sacrificing, you know, the most beautiful years of being 18 to 20, 21, 22, or if it's sacrificing at times your life for the land and people, then that's what we got to do. So when you ask me, what do I think Zionistic is and what it means to me, is probably that the will and the capability of saying, I'm willing to risk my time, my life, who I am, just for other people, for other Jewish people, and for having a land of our own.
Thanks for sharing all that. And so why did you decide to come to New Zealand? First of all, can you explain a little bit what Shlichim means for those who are unaware? And then connected with that, what brought you here?
Sure. So first of all, Shlichim literally means messengers. So in Israel, there's a huge project. Israel decided years ago that they want to send people all over the world to help small communities and try to form a relationship between those communities to the state of Israel. So today there is hundreds of shlichim all over the globus, in America, in Europe, even in Africa. And according to last year, also Dubai. So really all over. And I think as a young married couple, we decided that it's something that we will do at some point. And we decided that right after we finished our degree and in the university and we had a bit of experience of work, we decided to go to try and go for a shlichut. We we didn't know where to go. We didn't had any ideas. We knew that if we would go, we want something close to be next to family, friends, maybe United States or maybe Europe. We have family in America. And we started our journey with the Jewish Agency and Bnei Akiva, and we started to do the exams. And there's a year process of all of the exams on, and other, you know, you have to study a lot of things. And when we passed the process, they couldn't find the right fit for us because we are a couple, we're modern Orthodox, we're not too religious, we're not secular. So it was a bit of a hard combination to find something that would be a good fit for us and for the community. And at some point, Bnei Akiva actually suggested to us to come and have a meeting in their office. And they said New Zealand. And we were shocked because we knew nothing about New Zealand. We know it's far and there's not a lot of Jews there. I remember the first response was, no, it's too far for us. We want to be next to our family. Yeah, but we went for it. And
I think the main turning point for us regarding New Zealand was when we showed up to the interview and we met one of the community members, Nathan Lawrence. He was interviewing us on behalf of the community here. He was just in Israel he was mourning. One of his parents passed away and he was mourning. So we sat there and I think one of the main things Noam and I kept saying was that, you know, going on shlichut is a big step, right? You're leaving your family behind. You're moving yourself to a different country. You don't know the culture. You might not know the language. It's complicated. We also had Neve already at that point, our eldest daughter, and she was 9 months old. So it was a big move for us. And we kept saying that it's not going to happen no matter what. Like, it wasn't just about, you know, hey, let's go on an experience, an adventure. Let's just move. It had a lot of meaning for us. And we really wanted to find something meaningful. And the main thing we kept saying from the beginning is that we're not going to go somewhere that, you know, wants shlichim. There's a lot of communities that want shlichim. You know, it's a great thing to have in your community. It's a great add-on. But we really kept saying we want to go somewhere that needs shlichim. There's a big difference between want and need. And when we got to the interview with Nathan Lawrence and heard a little bit about the community in New Zealand and how shlichim here kind of need to do it all and touch on all different ages and all different groups and reach out and not only religious things, not only Zionist things, it was kind of a combination of it all. We heard that need. It didn't sound like a want, it sounded like a need. So that's when we kind of said, hey, you know, it might be far, it might be at the end of the world, we might know nothing about it, but it actually sounds like something we said from the beginning that we, you know, are willing to go for. And that's when it all clicked in, I think.
And I'm sure the New Zealand community are very grateful to have you. And so how have you found it here? Was it what you expected?
Oh, I don't think so. We didn't know what to expect.
Exactly.
Honestly.
We didn't know. We had no expectations because we didn't know. We did our research before. We went on Google Maps and saw our apartment, and read on Wikipedia that there's 5,000 Jews here. But beside that, we had no knowledge about New Zealand. And I think also it was a good thing because we came and we, first of all, learned the community, learned the people, sat with people for coffee or beer and get to know people. I remember the first event that we had when we just arrived, a week after we arrived, we did kind of a housewarming. Yeah, mm-hmm. Housewarming. And the diversity of the people that came to our place for the first time was shocking. We saw Gerim converts, we saw Kiwis, we saw South Africans, Israelis, Americans. And it was just, I remember I was shocked as an Israeli that it's his first time, not his first time out of Israel, but his first time experience real Jewish communities outside Israel. It was, wow, this is something totally new and I need to learn it. And I found it very, very exciting. And I think we say every day it was a good decision that we made.
Definitely.
And we're very happy to be here because we feel needed and we feel
meaningful.
Yeah.
Definitely culture shock, though. Let me say Israel and New Zealand are probably each one on a different end of a spectrum. If it's culture wise, if it's, you know, pace, there was a lot of getting used to also outside of work. I feel like in the Jewish community, we kind of got the hang of things pretty quickly. I think thanks to a lot of personal relationships we've built, it was easier to get to know the community through getting to know the people first and only then the bigger picture. But the culture, like the New Zealand culture, it took time to, you know, at the beginning.
The pace
is exactly the opposite. I mean, Israel is a, you know, go, go, go. Stop is not, it doesn't exist. I mean, you stop when you're at 11 o'clock at night, when you're falling asleep, you know, in front of your computer still working. And in New Zealand, it was like we would work like crazy. And I remember our first summer here, our boss called us and he was like, what are you guys doing? And I'm like, oh, we're planning this event. We're going here. We're going to see this place. We're going to, you know, do this and do that. And he's like, whoa, 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 stop. He's like, no, you don't get it. This, you're now on vacation. Now you're supposed to. And we were like, in what reality does your boss call you and tell you to take the time? So it took some adjusting to do, I think, mentality wise and culture wise. It took us some time to figure things out. But, you know, obviously, it goes without saying that the views here are extraordinary and beautiful. And we feel really privileged that when we do have time, we get to see the beautiful nature here. We feel like our kids are growing up with a lot of calmness. And, you know, I remember the first time Neve came home, thanked us, you need to be kind, which is a very New Zealand sentence and very not Israeli sentence. Not that Israelis aren't kind, but it's just, it's not something you grow up saying in kindergarten. So a lot of getting used to, and, overall just wonderful things.
That's very interesting. Have you got used to the pace?
Yeah, I think we've adjusted. I think at times it can drive us crazy still. Our Israeli blood is like, go, go, you know.
Yeah, when you walk in winter and on Queen Street at 4 p.m. and everything is shutting down.
Yeah.
It's really depressing. We used to, you know, all night stores and a lot of people outside. But there's also something nice in it. I remember when, I think in our second week here, someone told me, oh my God, you guys living in the city, it's so hectic, there's no parking. And I was thinking to myself, oh no, I want to be relaxed. I don't want to look for parking for 100 days, I don't know. And when first I took the car and looked for parking, I did like a 5 minutes round and I found parking. And I thought to myself, oh my God, this guy never been to Tel Aviv, because you find parking in Tel Aviv. There's no parking in Tel Aviv. There's a lot of parking spaces in Auckland, especially in the CBD.
Oh, it definitely has its ups and, you know, its pros and cons, the pace. But yes, very different, as you say. So tell us a little bit about what you do, what your role entails.
Wow. Okay. So as we said already in the interview, we understood that it's a little bit of everything. And I think reality wise, it's exactly what it is. On one hand, we work with the school here. So the Kadima school and preschool. So we run all the tefillot every morning, the prayers, and we run every Friday, the Kabbalat Shabbat. So all the preparations for Shabbat with the kids. And then we also run the non-formal Jewish studies. So all the high holidays, all the Israeli days. So Independence Day, Yom HaZikaron, you know, Remembrance Day, the Holocaust Day. So those are all things that we run together with the Jewish Studies division here in Kadima. And other than the school, we work with B'nai Akiva. So we help run the movement, the youth movement of B'nai Akiva, which is a Zionist Orthodox youth movement. Obviously in New Zealand, it's different than where it would be in other places because the population here, so it's less of a Orthodox population, but the Madrichim do follow kind of basic guidelines of World B'nai Akiva. So it's really interesting to work with them. It's working with Madrichim, which are the counselors, and also the Chanichim, which are the campers that come. We've got two camps a year, and then there's a lot more events that happen every, probably, I'd say, month and a half. some kind of B'nai Akiva event. So we've also got that. Other than that, we do volunteer work at Shalom Court, the Jewish old age home here, which we love going to visit and trying to show our faces there as much as possible. Then we do the actual AHC work, which is every weekend we're present at the services. Noam leads a lot of the services. We lead the kids service as well that happens on Saturday mornings. And alongside that, there's all the community events that we are in charge of. So if it's meals during the Shabbatot, so during the weekends, or if it's, you know, one-off parties, festivals, get-togethers. And then there's also just the last point I would touch is all the permanent programs we run. So we run youth programs, JNA. So we meet up in our place about once in 2 or 3 weeks with youth and do a fun night. Then we have the JYA, which is the Jewish Young Adults, which we also meet up about once a month and do something for them. We have Shabbat meals at our place that we host families from the community and a lot of tourists sometimes. So it really, it's a little bit of everything. I feel like I've touched on the main things we do. Obviously, there's a lot more, especially when the staff is small. And for example, the past year, we've been missing a rabbi. So we've filled in a lot of those gaps. I run the mikveh at the AHC. Noam has been doing consecrations and, you know, a lot of stuff that probably in a different community we wouldn't ever do. But here, small community, not a lot of people, and you do what you got to do.
Wow, that sounds like a very full program and very comprehensive as well. Have you found that you've needed to upskill in some of those areas, you know, extending into areas that you wouldn't have normally undertaken?
Oh, definitely. in many. I think mainly the maybe religious aspect, I would say. When you want shlichut, it's you go as an Orthodox couple, but you're not 100% representing, you know, the religion. You're it's part of your lifestyle, but you're not, it's not like a rabbi where, you know, that's your job, that's your focus. And I think for us, when arriving here, we realized that there are a lot of like religious places, categories, jobs, programs that kind of need us to be in them. So I think that's where I wouldn't say needed to upscale, but we kind of need to make our peace that, hey, we may have not come for this, but it is needed. So, you know, take a step forward and just do it.
Yeah.
We as shlichim, we surrounded a lot about food. I mean, it sounds funny, but food brings people together. So we try to do, when we do events, we try to do a lot of, we try to make nice food. And I remember when we spoke about it, actually a few months ago, and we said, we thought that we spend probably 30 to 40% of our shlichut in the kitchen. when you host so much, it's the best way to get people together and it's the best way to know people. So we do it a lot and we cook a lot and we clean a lot. So it's something that we weren't so used to it when we were in Israel. So we had to adapt very, very fast. I have to say Elisheva is the best cook in the world. I'm usually on the cleaning side.
Best cleaner.
Yeah, but...
definitely. Different cooking for, you know, a family of a couple and a 9-month-old than for, you know, 25 people minimum. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, food is key. I agree with that. It's the best way to bring people together, isn't it? Everybody loves food. Have you come across anti-Semitism in New Zealand?
So I can talk about myself. I go with a kippah on my head every day, all the time. I had once that someone tried to knock my kippah off of my head. I don't think it was from anti-Semitic reasons. I don't know, maybe he was drunk or high, I don't know. But so personally, I never had any anti-Semitic experiences. Most of I get comments usually about my kippah, but it's not from a, it's more from a curious place or very innocent place, that they just don't know what you have on your head. Looks funny. So people make comments, people are making comments on a, I would say on a weekly basis. I'm used to it. I'm resilient to it. I don't think I got any very anti-Semitic comment, but we do speak a lot with the young fellows here, with the
youth, teenagers,
the community, and I can say that it comes up a lot.
I think in schools.
Yeah, mainly in schools.
And what does that look like for the young people in schools? How does that manifest, those anti-Semitic comments? What kind of comments do they get?
A lot of jokes about the Holocaust, or you know, go back to the showers like the rest of your Jewish friends. Yeah, a lot of harsh comments about the Holocaust. It mainly comes in a humoristic
context
in some of the jokes, but they don't. I mean, we had a gathering one night of youth at our place, and we asked everyone to raise their hand if their friends and close friends at school know they're Jewish. And we were extremely surprised to see that just about 30% of the room raised their hands. The rest, you know, don't talk about their Judaism with other people, with their best friends at school. And when we asked why, you know, I said, maybe it's just in my head. I was like, oh, maybe it's just not a big part of their life, Judaism, because it's hard in New Zealand to be Jewish, and maybe it's easier to kind of separate the two. So maybe they don't feel the need to kind of say, hey, I'm Jewish. And I was surprised to find out that most of them don't share their Judaism because they are scared of comments. And they feel vulnerable to share, you know, they feel that if they do share it, they'll be very vulnerable. So, it was interesting to find out, but I think on ourselves, we didn't really experience much anti-Semitism here. We come from Israel, so it's very hard to knock us over, you know? Like, I feel like we don't get scared easily, or I don't know if scared is the word, but like, it's, I feel like we have a bit more of thicker skin just because that's how we grew up. So even if maybe something was said in a very sensitive way, we probably wouldn't have picked up on it that easily. But so, we do feel very safe here.
So in dealing with the young people of the community, what do you offer them to help them to deal with these kinds of thoughts and feelings and, you know, some of the anti-Semitic comments they get? What do you think is the answer for them?
Well, first of all, community.
Yeah, I think a safe place, first of all.
Safe zone.
It's important to understand that these young Jewish kids, they don't have any other program or frame to be Jewish at. And the 1 in 2 weeks program that we're doing, it's the only place they can actually talk to their Jewish friends in their age, same age, and be there, be present, and talk about Judaism, talk about their identity.
There's something in common without even needing to try. You know, it's, you walk into the room and you know that everyone in the room is in the same boat as you without even knowing their names.
Yeah,
there is something very comforting about that. So I think the first answer for, you know, when you're feeling not great out there, if it's in your school or if it's in your, you know, after school, when you're meeting your friends and you're feeling kind of alone, then these get togethers are there to give you exactly the opposite. So you don't feel alone. So it's a safe zone. You can talk about how you feel. You can talk about, you know, feeling lonely as a Jewish person and kind of get feedback from the people around you of, hey, you know, I feel the same. And just knowing that sometimes is comforting, that you're not the only one experiencing those feelings.
Yeah. And also, of course, we talk about it a lot, not only with the young kids, but also in Bnei Akiva, for example, last Machaneh, last camp, we spoke about it a lot. We don't want it to be, you know, something that because in the end of the day, we don't have a lot of time with those kids. And if we talk all the time about anti-Semitism, we don't want them to think about Judaism as something scary, or we want it to be fun. So we try to talk about it, not too much. And when we talk about it, for example, last camp, we brought someone from Israel to talk a little bit how to
deal
with comments, how to express yourself, even on social media. So we do talk about it. We want Judaism to be fun for these kids.
And I think we also make sure they know that we're always there. So when there is something going on in Israel, for example, if there's a big operation or something and it has effect on people here, then our phones usually are ringing 24/7. If it's the kids or their parents, you know, oh, they got this comment on Facebook, this, how do we answer? So we tried bringing in the past a few, you know, COVID days, a lot of Zooms to give guidance also to parents, but also to teenagers on how to deal with bullying online that has to do with anti-Semitism. And also our number, you know, our number is always there. They've got our number. They know they can reach out to us, and that they can kind of get the assistance. We a lot of times give them good sites that they can go on to get kind of biased news and not fall into any, you know, popular Israeli site that gives news, but it has some political agenda to it. So we try giving tools. But I think the strongest tool is the personal relationship and giving them a safe zone.
And you're obviously filling an important need there and offering that support and guidance, teaching and providing that community that they need. And also I can imagine that that whole package strengthens their identity and gives them what they need to stand proudly as Jewish young people in Aotearoa, New Zealand. So, well done.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I think that's probably a good place to finish up, unless you've got anything else that you'd like to add.
Not really. Just want to say thank you very much. Yeah. And kol hakavod, well done to you and for the work you're doing and to Jewish Lives.
Yeah. Thank you for having us. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah.
This has been a production of Jewish Lives NZ. Don't forget to visit us at jewishlives.nz. If you'd like to support our ongoing work, you'll find full details in the show notes.